all day in damp, drizzly conditions for the morning, the drizzle slowly easing out. It will be on the mild and humid side, temperatures low 20s, but where we see the sunshine coming through, 23 to 25 likely. For Northern Ireland, after a murky start, things gradually brightening up into the afternoon. Again, it will feel on the mild side here. And in Scotland, we'll probably keep an extensive cloud, particularly across northern and eastern areas, where it will be cooler compared with recent days. Temperatures just limited into the low to mid-teens, with a few spots of drizzle for the Northern Isles and potentially for the southeast of Scotland too. That's the way the weather's looking. It's back to Chris.
Many thanks, Chris Fawkes. Now on Radio 4, we travel to the Far East for our new book of the week. Yung Chang's new biography reassesses the reputation of the formidable 19th century ruler who single-handedly dragged China into modernity. Pik Sen Lim reads from Empress Dowager Cixi, the concubine who launched modern China.
In spring 1852, in one of the periodic nationwide selections for imperial consorts, a 16-year-old girl caught the eye of the 21-year-old Chinese emperor Xian Feng and was chosen as a concubine. In the court registry, she was entered simply as the woman of the Nala family, with no name of her own. Female names were deemed too insignificant to be recorded. In fewer than 10 years, however, this girl had fought her way to become the ruler of China. For decades, as the Empress Dowager Cixi, she would hold in her hands the fate of nearly one-third of the world's population. Cixi came from one of the oldest and most illustrious Manchu families, who had been government employees for generations. The family was well off. Her childhood was carefree. As a Manchu, she was spared the Han practice of foot binding. She learned to read and write a little Chinese, to draw, to play chess, to embroider, and to make dresses, all deemed desirable accomplishments for a young lady. In 1843, when she was 7, the empire had just finished its first war with the West. The Opium War had been started by Britain in reaction to Beijing clamping down on the illegal opium trade conducted by British merchants. China was defeated and had to pay a hefty indemnity. Desperate for funds and determined to stamp out theft by officials from the state coffers, the emperor ordered all the senior keepers and inspectors of the silver reserve for the previous 44 years to pay fines, whether they were guilty or not. Cixi's great-grandfather had served as one of the keepers, and his share of the fine amounted to a colossal sum. As he had died a long time ago, his son, Cixi's grandfather, was obliged to pay half the sum. After 3 years of futile struggle to raise money, an edict signed by the emperor confined him to prison, only to be released if and when his son, Cixi's father, delivered the balance. The life of the family was turned upside down. As Cixi, then 11, was the eldest of 2 daughters and 3 sons, her father discussed the matter with her and she rose to the occasion. Her ideas were carefully considered and practical. What possessions to sell, what valuables to pawn, whom to turn to for loans, and how to approach them. Finally, the family raised enough to get her grandfather out of prison. The young Cixi's contribution in solving the crisis became a family legend, and her father paid her the ultimate compliment. "This daughter of mine is really more like a son." Treated like a son, so she was able to talk to her father about things that were normally close areas for women. Inevitably, their conversations touched on official business and state affairs, which helped form Cixi's lifelong interest. Being consulted and having her views acted on, she acquired self-confidence and never accepted the common assumption that women's brains were inferior to men's. so she was not a great beauty, but she had poise. She was blessed with very fine skin and delicate hands. Her most arresting feature was her brilliant and expressive eyes. The harem she entered on the 26th of June 1852 was a world of walled-in courtyards and long, narrow alleyways. Here, the Empress occupied a palace, and each of the concubines had a mini-suite. The harem, like the whole of the Forbidden City, was governed by rigid rules. Exactly what objects the girls could have in their rooms, the quantity and quality of the textiles for their clothes, and the types of food for each day's consumption were meticulously determined in accordance with their rank. There were 8 rungs on the ladder of imperial consorts, and Saoirse was on the 6th, which put her in the lowest group. The new empress, a girl named Jeanne, had entered the court with Saoirse. She had also started as a concubine, but of a higher rank. Within 4 months, and before the end of the year, however, she had been promoted to the first rank, the empress. It was not on account of her beauty, for Empress Jeanne was quite plain. But she possessed the quality most valued in an empress. She had the personality and skill to get on with the other consorts and manage them as well as the servants. Although she must have been dissatisfied with her position at the bottom of the consort ladder, while Jeanne rose to be empress, Saoirse never did anything to undermine her. Saoirse was not petty, and she was wise. So instead of being rivalrous, the two women became good friends. Empress Jeanne may well have been instrumental in persuading the emperor to promote Saoirse in 1854 from rank 6 to 5, lifting her out of the bottom group. Then 2 years later, on the 27th of April 1856, Saoirse gave birth to a son, an event that was to change her destiny. The birth of the Empress' first-born male was a monumental event for the court, and Saoirse quickly became the undisputed number 2 consort. The whole court was swept into a frenzy of celebration over the baby, who was named Tsai Chun. Empress Jeanne was the official mother to the child and took precedence over Saoirse. This did not lead to animosity between the two women, and the boy grew up with 2 doting mothers. Behind these peaceful and idyllic scenes of the early childhood of Saoirse's son, the empire was facing monumental problems. The biggest peasant uprising in Chinese history, the Taiping Rebellion, had broken out in the south in 1850 and still continued, and there was violent unrest elsewhere. Then troubles multiplied. Foreign powers invaded. 15 years after the Opium War had ended in the Treaty of Nanjing that compelled China to open more ports for trade, granted the island of Hong Kong to Britain, and forced China to accept Western missionaries, gunboats once again arrived on the Chinese coast. The British wanted even more ports to be open for trade and their representatives to be allowed to station in Beijing. Lord Elgin, son of the 7th Earl, of Elgin Marbles repute, was dispatched to China with a fleet of warships. The French went along as an ally, wanting to gain unlimited access to the interior for their missionaries. In 1857, the Allies occupied Canton. In May 1858, they seized the Dagu forts some 150 kilometres southeast of Beijing. With enemy troops on his doorstep, the emperor was forced to send in negotiators who accepted all the Allies' demands. A year passed, and as had been stipulated, it was time for the agreements to be ratified in Beijing. The emperor created all sorts of hurdles and gave orders to back out of the deal. But the Allies returned in 1860 with a much larger force and marched to Beijing with little hindrance. They were now not merely seeking ratification of the agreements signed 2 years earlier, but had added new demands, including opening up Tianjin as an additional trading port and the payment of war indemnities. Lord Elgin wanted negotiation and sent his forward representative, Harry Parkes, under a flag of truce. Parkes and his escorts were seized and thrown into prison. The emperor personally ordered harsh incarceration. In Chinese warfare, to harm the enemy's messengers was the ultimate way of sending the message, "We will fight you to the death." The emperor's inner circle urged him to be uncompromising. They told him, "The barbarian Parkes is the one man good at military manoeuvre. Now that he is captured, the morale of the barbarian troops is bound to collapse." 3 days after this council of bizarre self-delusion, on the 21st of September 1860, the Chinese army was roundly beaten on the outskirts of Beijing. Emperor Xianfeng learned the news in the old summer palace. All he could do was to flee. On the 6th of October, the French troops burst into the old summer palace. On the 8th, Parkes and some other captives were released. Of the 39 men seized, 21 had been killed by the way they had been bound, as the emperor had ordered. Lord Elgin decided to serve a warning, something that would really hurt the emperor, and he settled on razing the old summer palace. The fire raged for days, enveloping West Beijing in black and ashen smoke. Travelling 200 kilometres to the northeast, the court crossed the Great Wall and arrived at the Royal Hunting Lodge on the edge of the Mongolian steppes. Just before he fled, Empress Xianfeng ordered his younger half-brother, Prince Gong, to remain in the capital and deal with the invaders. He quickly settled with the allies by accepting all their demands, including paying indemnities of 8 million taels of silver to each European country. Western powers began to install their representatives in Beijing. At first, the emperor was keen to return to the capital once the British and French forces had pulled out. But then he hesitated. Several times after announcing he was departing, he cancelled the trip. He finally chose to spend the grim winter in the northern wilderness, knowing it was bad for his delicate physique. The emperor, it appears, was determined not to be in the same city as the Western legations, or he could not bear being near the ravaged old summer palace. His self-imposed exile was prolonged and became permanent. Spending the interminable harsh winter in the ill-equipped hunting lodge, he fell ill and coughed blood. The night before he died, Xianfeng summoned to his bedside the men closest to him, his old inner circle, and announced his will to them. His only son, Bai Shixi, now 5 years old, would be the next emperor, and the 8 men were to form a board of regents to be jointly in charge. These were the same men who had ordered the capture and abuse of Elgin's messengers, which had resulted in some of them dying horribly and led to the burning of the old summer palace. Shixi could see that with these men in charge, stumbling along the same self-destructive road, there would be no end to catastrophe, which promised to destroy her son as well as the empire. She made up her mind to act, by launching a coup and seizing power from the regents.
Pik Sen Lim was reading from Empress Dowager Cixi, The Concubine Who Launched Modern China by Yung Chang. The book was abridged by Sarah Davis and produced by Gemma Jenkins. Thank you. sailing by. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Tuesday the 24th of September. The general synopsis at 1800, low 500 miles west of Fitzroy 991, expected 400 miles west of Fitzroy with little change by 1800 Tuesday. High northeast France 1024, slow moving, dissipating. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours: Viking northeast 4 or 5, occasional rain in southwest, good, occasionally poor in southwest. North at 0, south at 0, northerly 5 or 6, becoming variable 3 or 4 later, showers moderate or good. Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, variable 3 or 4, becoming east 4 or 5 later in forties and Cromarty.